Welcome to Playing Conversations. Joining our team is strategist Angela Tapay, Senior VP Group Strategy Director at Havas and guest lecturer at the Pratt Institute in New York. Hope you enjoy this conversation about owning your ideas and strategic foresight in the era of AI.
I love Paris. It's like one of my favorite cities. So you're originally from Paris?
I'm originally from Lyon, third largest city in France. We love to say that for some weird reason. But also we quickly follow by the capital of gastronomy and love. I mean, in Paris for a little while and then back in New York. I just have an assignment in Paris at the moment. So lucky me.
So you'll be based in New York for good or?
Yeah.
Nice.
And is that in Manhattan then?
Well, me, now I'm going to reveal a secret and all the New Yorkers will go, boo! But I used to live in Manhattan. And then when I had my little boy, I relocated to Jersey City, not Brooklyn. So I get a double boo. But then I was like, I actually like the airiness and the parks and the space. So, and my son just runs. So I'm glad that I am in a space with... in an area with a lot more space, yes.
Nice.
Definitely. Yeah, I have a friend who did the same thing and is living in Jersey City. I went to college in upstate-ish New York, if you can call Rochester upstate.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, so I love to visit the city when I get a chance and see my designer friends because that's where a lot of them ended up. And photographer friends, it's such a great city for that life.
Oh, yeah.
But Brendan and Karen, I feel I need to create an excuse to come and visit you guys.
Yeah.
You know, me too.
What could I do to take me to that side of the world and just stay for a little bit? I think I
You're always welcome. Well, Sydney hosts now like South by Southwest as sort of an entity outside of the Austin, Texas one. And that's a great excuse to come maybe to be a guest speaker.
I love that.
Yeah, because your background is, I had a look at your profile. You're advertising initially or creative, like a brand advertising background, but you actually sort of evolved into a strategy.
Yeah, we were saying yesterday, strategy is a term maybe some people find ambiguous or it's a broad definition. So how do you define strategy and like what it means given your creative background, your roots?
Absolutely. I mean, I've been practicing it for over 15 years now, so I take it as a privilege. You might agree to this, but as pure creative, it is a craft and a skill at the same time. And when your brain is geared that way, it is actually very lucky to be able to find a lot of joy and a lot of opportunity within it. But for me, when people ask me, what is a strategist? It will be someone that starts with a white piece of paper, a completely clean canvas, and will be able to give you several routes to get from A to Z. And strategists have the ability to simplify the complex, elevate the dull, and they are very much living at the intersection of commercial success and human impact. Because again, to be successful, you have to make a meaningful difference. And that difference is for people. So,
exactly.
So first, you need to love humanity and have the ability to look at people and observe. And Brendan, we talked a little bit about that. And then what you're going to do from that, how you're going to get to them, how you're going to make them want what you have, that's the strategy.
Mm. Yeah.
Another thing we spoke about was living in different cities, right? Mm. And I know you've lived in a few different cities. You said people watching. So one of the best ways to learn culture is to people watch in different cities, right? And I can only imagine some of the stories. We spoke about Taiwan too, right? We overlapped there.
Were you based in Taiwan? Or?
No, I just visited, but I understand that you guys were based there for a little while, right?
Yeah. We were there for 4 years. Yeah.
Mm. And you were in Tokyo, right?
Yeah, Tokyo and Beijing. So quite different. I mean, Asia, but then once you hit Asia, you're like, oh my God, the diversity.
It's so different,
And Tokyo and Beijing could not be more opposite.
Yes. Even other cities within China are so opposite. Like, I mean, so different. Like they all have the, from south to west to north to eastern cities, or even sort of tier two and tier three cities that I've sort of experienced working in when I was based at Philips. Just what you sort of experience and learn and being immersed in all those places and the different sort of, even just different cultures within the one culture has a huge impact on your work, especially as a strategist. Like what you said, it's like at the end, you're sort of fundamentally finding what's right for the end user or the person.
It's just gone 11 o'clock at night here, and Karen was dead on the couch right before this podcast. So I thought, there's no way she's going to be, we're not going to get a word out of her.
It was my power nap.
Yeah, I have my yerba mate here, a little caffeine.
Oh, nice.
Poor Michelle, she's up at like 6, is it 6?
6 a.m.
6 a.m.
Oh my God. So we're all... guys, I did into the time zone, and you've been too kind for me because I'm like the one with a very pleasant time. So I thank you.
It's okay. I got to see the sunrise this morning. Oh, wow. So that's
like,
a rare thing.
Don't make me do this again. But
it's pretty. Yeah. It's a rare thing for me. So
yeah,
appreciate
sunrises
that,
are for old people.
Oh man.
Yeah. But you know, getting back to the strategy and culture thing, and then tying it back to being in New York, one of the things you're doing there is guest lecturing at Pratt, right?
That's correct. Yes.
At the Pratt Institute. Maybe you can talk a little bit about your role there and what you're bringing to this new space.
For sure. I mean, I met Dom about how long ago now? Maybe 6 months ago. We actually met at the LIA, a London International Award Show in October last year. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got chatted with Pratt. And obviously, Dom gives the nicest of intros, you know, thanks to him. And then I joined Pratt Institute on the AI certificate course. And the course is very much tailored to anyone across verticals, whether it's actually the audience is extremely creative across different professions in creativity. But the folks are professionals and they were executive usually and work across all verticals of industries, which was interesting. And I think what Dom and I talked about is maybe the course needed more on strategic foresight and how strategic foresight, and Brendan, we talked a lot about this, how strategic foresight goes hand in hand with design. Because by applying strategic foresight, and for me in particular, powered by AI, so I speak to how I utilize AI to amplify my efforts and my work and my exploration. And when you bring that into design thinking, all of the sudden you can actually amplify, accelerate what you want to do at scale. So my segment focuses on category creation, which I think both of you and Michelle, you probably agree, as you know, founders of your company, you're constantly thinking about the white space, the next industry, the next group of consumers. Where are you going to have a breakthrough and how do you apply design to that? So what I'm bringing is the strategic foresight element. So not just strategy, the pure strategic principles, but how can you try to see ahead? Prediction is really tough, but how could you persuade people, again, to want to engage with you or engage with your product or engage with the design experience that you put out there? And it's been a lot of fun. And I'm in awe with what the groups have come up just by just bringing that strategic foresight to the curriculum, what those guys have been able to produce in terms of design thinking. I could not believe it. And so it's like, it's a collective and an exchange of ideas. And we're going to go into the fall session and I'm super excited about it because I've seen stuff that I've never thought we could do.
And you said it's across disciplines. So you have like a Pratt has a variety of sort of like fashion, communications. Is there industrial design or like?
Industrial design, engineering design. Yeah. And you guys, yeah, you will be.
Wow, that's quite fascinating to see how they across disciplines and how to utilize a specific tool and a method to help improve your process.
Is it a little bit figure it out as you go? Because I understand it's the first. Is it the first course, or this is the first time that
it's
strategic?
It's the second year that they're doing it.
Okay.
And Dom even spoke. I mean, he could see the difference, and I guess I could too. But how developed AI was a year ago to where we are today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now the thing is, the algorithms just self-learn. So even just in Foley will be unparalleled. It is mesmerizing as well as terrifying on so many levels. Mm-hmm. But that's where you've got to remain ahead. You've got to be smart, right? You've got to again, it's another strategy partner. If you look at it that way, then you start sparring with your AI agent or agents rather than, you know, being worried about how it's going to replace your craft.
Mm. Yeah. Well, and being in an industry that is very human focused, I mean, you really have to sort of utilize it as a tool rather than a replacement. You know, and I think that's the fear that most people have is that they're going to be replaced by AI, or their job is going to be replaced by AI. And I just
say it, Karen. Say it.
I'm not a skeptic or anything, but I really believe in like the human craft a lot. I think there's something really magical about it, and I think AI, I've always believed that it's a tool, but you always have initially the idea comes or the inception comes from a person, a human. And then it's how you know, I mean, there's only at this stage, it's so far only limited of where that goes. But as you said, within a year from last year to now, how fast it's developed, you just don't know where it will take.
Agree.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing, and you guys would have seen, AI can produce and reproduce very well, but imaginative design, if this is such a thing, or visceral design, that it will not understand. You can only do this, and Brendan, like you talked about, observing people, that comes from a human being with their skill and their craft and lived experience, right? AI will never know what it is to be pregnant or in love or aging or
emotion,
right? Or watching the sunrise at 6 a.m.
We never know.
It could write a story about it, but the real emotion isn't there.
Yeah.
The feeling.
It's funny. You being French, Karen and I, she was having a little, I'm not a skeptic, but I'll play devil's advocate rant yesterday when we were prepping for this talk. And you know what came up to us? You'll appreciate this being French. The song, the Daft Punk song.
Yeah.
Harder, better, faster, stronger. To me, what I get out of that song is this whole pursuit of like just like getting the engine going, like feeding the machine, and AI kind of embodies that a lot. It's kind of a funny thing. A lot of the hype right now is around this trains are moving, and if you don't jump on it, you're going to miss out. And so it creates a bit of fear mongering globally too. And so that's where the tension is, I think, sometimes between people who want to hang on and preserve something human and cultural, and then those that are just like, no, and embracing of the technology. So
do you find in like some of the work that your students have sort of excited, what you mentioned being exciting and the space, what the opportunities that are coming out of it, do you see that there's anything like a yearning for the craft rather than sort of a tech sort of side that everyone kind of sort of chases down? Like, for example, some of the works that they're, or some of the outcomes that the students are coming out of your class.
Do people lock horns and get spirited about?
Or they really embrace it and just take it for what it is?
I mean, we had a mix, and actually we talk a lot about our journey, the personal journey through it. And I think a lot of them, so it's interesting because I think there is a natural instinct to be a skeptic or being very critical over what it does, especially when you look at the quality of the work being rendered, right?
Yeah.
But then all of them have said now they could actually agree through that and realize that the moment you become the owner of your idea, of your thinking, of your imagination, then the tool become as powerful as ever and it becomes a sparring partner. So that was really interesting. So one of the things that we talked a lot, right now it is new and a lot being created through it. But in a year and a half from now, everything we will see coming out of AI will feel like category conformism because it will all look the same.
Yeah,
it
generic.
It standardizes. And even though it creates a different beauty style, very quickly, we will all know that's AI, that's AI, that's AI. Mm-hmm. So the conversation for us, and that's again, and you guys have seen it from the work and the thinking model that you actually talk about, how you are the convergence of good for planet, good for people, you know, what if, and all this exploration, this introspection. We talked about how do you make sure that you go away from that category conformist mindset to being a category creator? And that's the hardest part. And that will always remain.
Yeah.
We are responsible for shaping models, product, industries, to finding white spaces. That's our job. That, and again, yes, that's the hardest part of the job. That's what keeps you awake at night. That what makes you wake up at 6 a.m., watch the sunrise, or maybe Karen like being like on the sofa in the evening. But that's the task. That never ends. At some point, maybe AI will be able to suggest to us what it is, but at this stage, it's not. And so people should continue to pursue and craft, again, takes a lot of discipline and effort. The moment it becomes easy, it's not a craft anymore. It's just like stuff, right?
Yeah.
So that's the conversation that those guys had. And all of a sudden they were like, well, I was a skeptic, but I took that course because I wanted to understand what I didn't understand. And now I am ahead. And now I feel I can navigate myself through it because I can see where the design or the thinking is going, which was super cool.
Yeah. And they see the opportunity more than the barrier. Or a failure, like they're going to sort of need to change positions or change career opportunities.
Yeah, I can really understand, especially using AI as a partner, and it can help a lot in expediting ideas. But in terms of the creative ideas and owning those yourself, it's a big difference because the AI can understand what the trends are now and take information from what's already out there. But in terms of setting those trends and being the first to spark those ideas, you know, AI can only put you so far ahead.
Yeah. That's human imagination.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've had some other equally as cool guests as you on the podcast before. And one of them was Michael Held, who's VP of design at Steelcase. And one thing he pointed out, AI obviously will homogenize things. It's already a problem in design. And maybe there's ways to shake this up. You know, there's a lot of old white guys like me who run agencies and we need more diversity, right? Diversity of opinion, background, race, everyone. So that was something that he pointed out that stuck with me. And the other thing that we had the head of V-Files on, Julianne Key, one thing she mentioned, which stuck with me too, the fashion world thinks very differently about trends and conformism. Actually, you know, fashion comes from a place of anti-conformism. And, you know, she spoke a bit about the punk era being born of like a resistance. And I think that's what keeps everything fresh and unique and not homogenous. And that's important, right? To keep, you know, particularly in the design world, you know, diversity of opinion and exploration, and make sure not everything becomes cookie cutter, because then we all start to think the same and be the same and be very boring.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, and I love to hear both of you, Michelle and obviously Brendan, Karen, your perspective on that. But, you know, if we are so concerned about the homogenization of everything and the fact that the industry will just, you know, collapse. Maybe, I don't know, that's maybe a bit too French extreme, but we were talking about what's our responsibility in actually advancing the model of the industry. And I think usually that's the newer generations. They usually look at what there was and it's like, we don't like that agency model. We don't like that marketing model. We don't like those frameworks. They don't work for us. I'm going to put a slant on it, or I'm literally going to go against it. It is our role. It is our job. It is our responsibility to actually evolve that model if it is not working. And so therefore, what would be the creators of tomorrow? What would be, I mean, we can think of a name, and I think it'd be quite fun to do this.
Yeah.
Or ask AI to churn some for us. But I think, I don't know, Michelle, your perspective is like, how do you see your role in changing that industry? Because someone somewhere will stand up and say, and create a sprout of what it could be, like you both, Brendan and Karen, have done with Play & Co. you actually decided to give it an edge, give it a slant, and was like, we're not going to be a typical design agency. We will be different, and we will actually immerse ourselves into optimistic futurism, I think you talked about.
Yeah, I think just finding, going into the future and understanding our responsibility and using our tools as designers to be able to make the right decisions for our future, and using AI in that as if we need it, yeah. And understanding how, like you said, it's a tool and can use it for strategy, but with the right intentions in mind. And that's, you know, planet and people health. There's a lot of industries out there and a lot of places to work where that is very much not top of mind. It's hard to find those little niches that are kind of trying to keep that in mind and at the forefront. So I would love to continue that mindset into the future and that responsibility. And I hope, and I know a lot of my age group and earlier career designers and mid-career designers also will do that. You know, it's every generation has a variety of people, but I like to, again, have that futuristic, optimistic futurist viewpoint. So we'll see. It's an interesting time. Like you said, everything's changing really quickly.
Mm. And if you do narrow it down, not to harp on, actually, we could do a double take here. So we could look at narrowing in on the kind of work that we do, because creativity and design is quite a broad spectrum of topics. And then we can also look at potentially what you do in your day-to-day job and the kind of clients and work that you have. But with Play & Co, we're really striving, I think, since we said planet health and people health, it really helped us to focus who we want to work with and actually to gravitate. So when you start to speak that message, you start to attract like-minded people. Mm. And so that's part of maybe starting to build a bit of a causal image without sounding too greenwashy or pitchy. But when you said looking to the future, I think some of the projects that we would love to get into that we're really trying to get into at the moment, it's not like product design anymore or brand design. It's the whole package. It's helping people understand data in ways that they've never understood it before. Precision agricultural tech is fascinating because, you know, now you can use lasers to basically kill weeds in a field. There's all these advanced technologies that are really sophisticated to maintain the health of a crop. And we find that fascinating. We find, I think getting back to what Michelle was saying, people and companies who are bold enough to want to improve food supply or...
Yeah, just like sort of humanity in that sense.
Yeah.
Pressing challenges, global challenges. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of really interesting things, topics that we like to cover. And to Michelle's point, AI is a really interesting piece of that puzzle because... never before have you been able to process research that quickly and then pull together a report on drought and flood water kind of mapping in a geography, you know, a decade out that quickly, which means that a company can react and prepare farmers and...
Well, it gives you a good chance as you talk about those sort of spaces that you haven't explored yet. By doing that, you sort of pull from that data really quickly the opportunities, like, oh, we see this point and this point and connecting them together and realize, hey, this is missing and this is an opportunity to create something that will help solve that problem.
So there's a bit of strategy in it, I think.
Yeah.
There is. And we've done that last time as well when we started talking and then realized more industries or more domains of industries where... Mm. The beauty about design is it permeates everything. It's just like water to me. It's one of the cleanest elements that goes through everything. We were talking about aging, rejuvenation, support, health support. It's everywhere. But you're talking about the connection of data point. One of the things that we explored during the Pratt AI course last time was the students were given assignments in industries that they were not necessarily close to. And so where we started with was to actually build synthetic boards and board members. And we, for example, talk about agricultural engineering. We were then asking, okay, we want to build a board of 10 individuals that each have a specific function in finance, in engineering, in design, as as a crop grower, as a scientist, the rest of it. And as the owner of the land, right? And we ask very, very specific question. And what AI was doing was actually impersonating each of those individuals, tapping into all existing information, building profile, and give you positive potential answers. So then we were moving away from actually doing static research into dynamic focus group.
Right. Yeah.
With synthetic persona. That was literally in the knowledge that existed. And that was fun. And then where we told the students, do not stop there. This is what now you've actually had the ability to understand what exists at scale. But again, you are the creator of that category. So where could it go? And that's what the work that I've seen, you know, that you have produced in your show reel, in your reel, that actually demonstrate how you build sustainable, desirable, viable solutions. And I think, Brendan, where we left it for last time was like, how do we even create not necessarily product, but experiences that evolve with you? And then, Michelle, I think that will relate really nicely. You know, your generation does not have a third place like my generation would have. And now I'm starting to show my age, but you either at home or you're at work or you were in a bar or something fun, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit simplistic, but that was... You don't have that. Therefore, the experience is everywhere, is nowhere and everywhere. Well, that in itself, that's a massive category change because your generation is already functioning in that way. So then you can now create a whole industry that allows you to interact and produce and create and imagine what it could be, because those spaces are as well as physical, as well as digital. And I thought that in itself is phenomenal, right? So that's like WeWork 2.0, if you like, if you don't want to be in the WeWork building. So where will you be? So that was how we had a lot of fun. And then we passed the time. We're like, okay, we need to close and we're talking 2 weeks time. But that's the stuff that fascinates me, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I feel like I'm getting in over my head. Sorry, go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I've also been like diving into some research on third spaces and how important they are and how lacking they are for us. But also to go back to your other point, especially one of the things I've loved about working at design agencies is every day is different. Every project is a different industry. You always kind of have to be on your toes thinking as if you were in a different industry and totally different person, like a farmer or a politician or whatever. So that's very, very interesting, using AI to take that research to the next level so quickly, because there's only so far you can go thinking about, hey, what is life like if you're a farmer? AI may know better than you. So besides from, you know, actually interviewing people.
Also storyboarding what might be early on too, without going through big exhaustive kind of efforts to produce an animation or a video or something. You know, some of the tools coming out, just the ability to create vignettes, motion vignettes, storyboards to help your clients or your stakeholders or your teammates basically rally around a direction or a vision, I think is really interesting. There's new ways of working. The traditional silos of being a product designer, a brand designer, a UX designer, I think they'll still be specialists, but they're kind of cross-pollinating a lot now. The lines are blurring. It's not as simple as maybe it once was.
Yep. And a quick question on that one. I really like that because you're right. Sometimes if you talk about a futuristic idea or what's next or something that has not been created, unless you can visualize it, unfortunately, people struggle wrapping their head around it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because imagining what you can't see and putting yourself out there. Some folks are in that world all the time and others can't. It's just a struggle. But doing that exercise and using AI, I'm interested in understanding like what worked well, but where did the machine struggle? Or where did the machine try to please you and always give you the answer that was pleasing you, but not giving you something that was tangible? Mm-hmm. I love your perspective on that. Now I'm asking you to tap into a project that was a while back.
But full disclosure, this is something we're doing on the fly, so we don't really have a foolproof model like everyone. The first one we did, actually, we didn't even use AI. We just mood boarded and images and
old school research
yeah, and sketching.
Yeah.
And human creative capital. I think that's part of being designers of different backgrounds. We come together and just kind of use past experience to basically fabricate a story and then work from there. Where the tools fall over, like you said, you know, they're falling over very differently now than they would have 3 months ago. So some of the motion tools like Kling with the very limited, Runway, I think I've played with a little bit, and with the amount I've played with that, it's advancing really quickly. It learns. So there's a machine learning element, I guess. And then it learns who I am as a director or as someone who's inputting the commands. So
I think that the challenge with creating something in an AI tool that's visual is that you have a vision in your head of what you think it's going to be. And then you try and do the prompts. And maybe some people are better at prompting than others, but every time it spits out what you're trying to articulate or trying to visualize in your own head, it just never gets there. And that's because you yourself have that vision. And it's like the only way that the AI feel like is going to take it is if they put a chip in your head and then it's like, okay, we can actually read what your thoughts are, what your actual visual is, and create that. So I think that's where the frustration lies with me if you try to use it. So I feel like it's better to physically maybe sketch and use mood boards and sort of do it that way. And maybe that's just because I'm a lot older and I'm from that generation where you've been taught a specific way and you've used those tools for such a long time, sort of the manual process, like old desk research or, you know, physically sketching and pulling mood images and stuff like that to help. I know you're dying to go.
I am, no, but I want to build on what Karen's saying because I think she's leading to something. I heard someone say something really interesting the other day, and I think that it's, I don't know how true it is, but you have to give up control. So a lot of the tools that we've used in the past, the ones that we've embraced as me as a designer, and I'm sure everyone else, is that you really learn the suite of tools that are within an app like Illustrator, right? So you learn how to control a pen and shapes, color, palettes, all of these elements. Whereas the tools that are being developed, the AI-based tools, it's different. You're a director now. So you give up control, but you direct, and then you let the tool interpret and create imagery, and it may or may not be on the mark. And I think where Karen's going is, which is, it's higher than the tool. It's what's more important is that we are the directors. So I think that the kind of designers that will endure and evolve and grow will be the ones that are not necessarily making a wage today as producers, you know, so as a specialist in CAD or a particular rendering software. They're the designers that have the intellect to problem solve and have a point of view and then direct the tool to create a direction. I've only seen AI look interesting in the initial idea generation phase. It's not yet at the, hey, I'll take this model for you and send it to a tooling supplier and get it all drafted up and ready for production. I think that'll probably come at some point, but right now it's still very front end, kind of helping to push your ideas along faster, which helps someone like me. Jason is a natural sketcher, but if I haven't sketched for a while, it can really hinder my process in spooling up and capturing good ideas that are in my head that I just can't get out quickly enough, can't get pen to paper quick enough. And maybe there's tools that can now help me do that. So
yeah,
I don't know if that answered your question.
No, it does. And actually that's very similarly the same feedback that we got from our students as well. AI has helped me a lot in generating initial ideas. And I think what the team was saying is like, I can actually see now all the options that will not work because it's given me that. But they all realize I am the ultimate creator of that idea. And strategy is just the same, weirdly enough. You can be a conformist strategist, go with the basic tools and frameworks and models. And I remind my strategists all the time, these are flows of thinking. They are guides so you do not lose yourself. But what you put in that box, or ideally what you put around that box, this is pure creation. And that takes time. That takes iterative thinking and introspection and this constant back and forth between me, community, culture, the world, community, culture, and the world. And through that, you create, then you come up with the strongest strategies they could ever be.
I just wanted to say I am the ultimate creator of my ideas. Like a really powerful statement. I love that statement you said.
Michelle, we need to talk more.
Definitely.
One thing that I've seen in design feeds online is a lot of debate around ethics as well, and even creative authorship and ownership, and when is this my work and when is it not my work? Mm-hmm. And I see some, I think actually the most fierce debates right now are not necessarily in product and graphic design, they're more in advertising.
Yeah, or copywriting. Or
copywriting or marketing.
Mm.
And there are people that have built great careers being in the advertising industry. And I think that's one area where maybe the powers that be are gobbling up the jobs and saying, hey, looking at it as an opportunistic means of, you know, accelerating the process and cutting out often hard to work with creatives in this, in the advertising world. Well, how do you see that playing out? Because ethics is not something that's fiercely talked about too much, at least at a high level, or is it? If I go to OpenAI's website,
I think at the moment it's like, I always say this to Brennan, it's like that sort of scene out of Zoolander when everyone says Hansel's so hot right now. That's like all I think about that everyone gets to. It's like AI is so hot right now. That's all I can think. And maybe because it's that hot topic, sort of, you know, the whole ethics and that kind of gets pushed aside until it doesn't, you know, until it becomes like, hey, this is really encroaching on our lives and it's encroaching on sort of a lot of the points that Brendan was mentioning. And that's when I think the red flag, because I know that sort of happened in the early phases of if product design or industrial design, when sort of examples like Nike in the past or any of those big brands that had factories in Asia, you know, there was always like the issues around labor. And then over time, of course, they addressed all that stuff and, you know, being very transparent about where they get things made and how they're made. And it's very transparent. And I think maybe time will allow that to happen in the tech world. I don't know, maybe because it is so fast and it's evolving so quickly that sort of those regulations, I mean, other than governments putting into play.
Penny for your thoughts. Can you wrap a bow on that?
Yeah.
Help us make sense of all of this?
Oh, if you have like a thought around it.
I think what you describe is very accurate in the sense that we were reading a piece of study a couple of days ago about where is the power going? Is it going from state to commercial entities, as in enterprises? And 68% of people in France agree that it should go to commercial entities, as in companies, because citizens today are consumers, a lot more aware, able to make their own decisions. So a potential scenarios is that when these ethics or conflict of interest or IP will become a big enough problem for large commercial entities or organization, maybe all of a sudden it will start kicking in. Because I think you're really right. Right now is the hottest thing, is the coolest thing. And you never want Debbie Downer to actually slow it down. And when people start talking about ethics, it's like the same. It's like, well, yeah, fine. But you know what? We deal with it later.
Yeah.
So it will snowball until at some point someone big enough with big enough money will actually start talking about it, and then it will become a problem, and then it will be a whole new industry or domain springing out of AI, which would be AI and ethics and diversity and inclusion, which is kind of sad. These things are always so reactive. But also the one thing we talked about last time, it's there is such a divide between the West and the East now. And I would love to be able to see what AI does on the East, in China. I mean, those guys are like double the population, double the manufacturing power. They've got extreme amount of people that renders these things. And again, less legislation, less regulations. Just that alone, I would love to see how AI, the war or the race to AI, changes from a Western perspective to an East, you know, a more East-like perspective, and how much more advanced they are. Because I think it's embedded into companies, into workflows. It feels so different. Yeah, that's something that intrigues me, but I'm not able to tap into it because the tools that I have are Western tools.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys see a little bit more of that because you're closer to that side of the world than we are.
Yeah. When we were, I mean, getting to it, like the whole thing about the East versus the West, when we were living there, like we saw how tech savvy everyone was, even like elderly people. They were like way more advanced in understanding and adopting the tool, like tech tools. But being based here in Australia, we don't. I think, again, you're only exposed really to Western tools. That possibly they might have that they're using, like different versions of ChatGPT or whatever, you know.
Yeah. That's our next trip, I think. That's after the wine tasting.
Yeah.
We need to move into technology exploration and we need to go and hit a little Taiwan or a little Tokyo and see what's going on. And come back. I'm loving this. This is well too.
Yeah.
We'll do a research trip.
Both of those places are on my list to go to in the next year or two. So that works out.
Michelle, stop planning. It's happening.
It's already
just go
in the books.
Michelle.
Michelle and I actually have another call in 10 minutes. So otherwise I normally would be freewheeling this. So I want to make sure we have time to spend a few minutes to cover off on anything that maybe we haven't covered off on yet.
Yeah, I guess one question, as an educator and with your career, do you have a viewpoint or any advice for future generations of strategists or designers that will have this tool of AI to wield, or just aside from AI? I don't know. What's on the top of your mind recently?
In all honesty, what makes me the happiest is when all of the sudden these disciplines or craft respect their skills, but decide to actually break those silos and completely partner. And that might feel a bit old fashioned because that's actually how the industry started. But now corporations, organizations are bigger, or either in terms of size or in terms of geographic positions. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing that rejoices me more when I see the designer getting in a room or in a thinking space with the strategies, with the data analysts, and they decide to tackle the problem together rather than just going, oh, this is the challenge and that's my section within it. When they go, that's a challenge, but actually, do you know what? We're going to take it to the next level. We're going to reframe this. What if it was this? What about that? Could it be? And then all of the sudden, what comes out of this is already embedding the craft in itself, is in the intersectionality of what people produce the best, and then the lived experiences, the know-how, and also the desire of what those individuals have. So for me, Michelle, just you know, love what you do, continue to be the creator that you are, but then again, lean into your strategies and say, I want to solve this with you. Mm-hmm. Who else do we bring along to actually create the most innovative solutions possible? And that does not, we talk about it, but it does not happen systematically. And you don't need a project manager to tell you to get in the room. I mean, ideally, you want to be scoped for it, right? But when that happens naturally, I mean, the solutions that come out of it are unparalleled. Because we can all understand each other. The moment it starts with respect and that we have a common goal, or we decide to reframe that common goal together, then the magic happens.
Definitely.
Oh, Michelle, what a question and what an answer.
Yeah. Totally yes. agree.
I don't want to say anything now. Yeah. I don't want to mess it up.
I'm just like visualizing all the times I've been on teams where, you know, you get that magic moment of the idea and the little push forward that everyone gets excited about.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
So cool.
And I think when you were saying that, Angela, to me, that's the new designer. That's the designer yep. of the future. Mm-hmm. And we talk about problem solving and all of this, but, yep. you know, fascinating challenges that may not have had seen the need for a designer once upon a time, like agriculture, like aged care or whatever, definitely needs designers and strategists more than ever. So
people think design is actually a stylistic application exactly. of an idea, yeah. and it's not. No. It is that's the beyond stigma. This. It's mm-hmm. actually, to me, it's strategy in action, especially when you move into experience design and regenerative design or generating design, I think it is called. Mm-hmm. It blows my mind away because the skill is very similar to a strategist in the way they think about patterns. Mm-hmm. And what I love as well about designers, a lot of them are free. Thinking they are comfortable thinking freely because they know ultimately they will be able to apply it in a visual manner. And yeah. they'll be like, talked about five things, and you know what? It will become three storyboards, and you will see what that means. It's very similar to a strategist. And when those groups bring those skills together, I mean, the work is very beautiful and it is already very humanly applied because a designer will tell you, frankly, this will work or that won't work.
Exactly. They sort of bundle it all together. And then they make it a reality. That's the thing. They make it real and they make it something that you actually hold or touch or feel or sort of immerse in. And that's what's magic, really.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This was so cool. Thank you so much.
It's such an honor. Thank you.
And Michelle, a pleasure to have met you.
Yeah.
Again,
so,
I'm here
so
now. You have
here.
My details. We yes. can talk anytime. And
yeah.
then, yeah. Enjoy Plan Co. I think it's a very, 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 very magical, unique place.
Yes. Oh,
thank you so much. And we'll thank definitely you. Like keep in touch. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you,
speak
everyone.
Soon.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
See you later.